Winter Storm.
I'm Peter.
And I'm Felice.
Welcome to our travel podcast. We're specialist travel writers, and we've spent half a lifetime exploring every corner of the world.
So we want to share with you some of our extraordinary experiences and the amazing people we've met along the way.
This week, we're talking to James Wilcox, travel expert extraordinary. James's company, Untamed Borders, sets out to satisfy the hunger of that rare breed of traveller who's already been to the far corners of the earth, got the t-shirts, but still wants more. James organises holidays to the world's strangest destinations. They can even be in or near recent war zones. On paper, these are the kind of places you might want to get away from rather than go to. And incredibly, they also include ski resorts. Now, we've skied in what we imagined, that was until today, were some of the most exotic and unusual resorts in the world. I've personally been to over 550 of them, but now realise that I've barely begun the journey. In this two-part series, we take a look at a couple of the most extraordinary experiences that James can offer. Firstly, skiing.
So James, you specialise in taking tourists to the world's most wild and unexplored countries, be it for hiking, sightseeing, or anything else. But you also take people skiing to these amazing places. Now, skiing is a subject very close to our hearts, as you know. Your travel company is called Untamed Borders. Tell us about it.
Yeah, we take some people skiing in a number of places. We work as a company across the Middle East, Central Asia, and North and East Africa. As you said, we guide people to places that are hard for people to organize independently and often don't have much of a tourism infrastructure. And so we got into skiing in Afghanistan, which when we got there had pretty much a zero ski community or ski history. And the reason we got involved was we'd fairly recently begun as a company. We were guiding some trekking trips and some cultural trips in Afghanistan. And when I was in the Wakhan Corridor, which is this thin strip of land in the far northeast of the country between Tajikistan and Pakistan, on a trekking trip, I met a British guy and he was working for a development organization in Kabul. And he and his mates went skiing every winter in the Salang Pass north of Kabul. And he said, if I was serious about being an adventure travel operator, I should advertise a ski trip to Afghanistan. And if I got enough people booked, he'd take a week off work and he'd guide them on the slopes because he'd been a ski instructor in Europe in a previous life. So I said yes. And so we advertised it. In 2011, we brought two ski tourists to Afghanistan. We skied in the Salang Pass, but also unbeknownst to us, at the same time in a central province called Bamiyan, there were two other ski things going on. One was a chap called Christoph, a journalist from Switzerland. He had been stuck in Bamiyan the winter before, and he's Swiss, so of course the first thing he wanted to do was to find a pair of skis and go skiing, but he couldn't find any. So he promised himself if he ever came back to Afghanistan, he'd bring some skis and he'd organize a ski race. So he did that in 2011. And at the same time, a development organization called the Aga Khan Foundation was asked to implement a tourism development program in the province. And part of that program was a winter tourism program. And part of that was to try and develop ski tourism, backcountry skiing. And so these three, Christoph, ourselves, and the development organization started developing a sort of ski program in Bamiyan. And so we brought along ski tourists. There was a ski race every year, a backcountry ski race. And that developed for a number of years. Two of the Afghan skiers who were part of that ski program competed at FIS races in Europe. They tried to qualify for the Olympics in Korea in 2018. And so this is now sort of 15 years of skiing in Afghanistan. Things have changed quite a lot with the Taliban taking over, but that is the sort of beginning of our skiing in Afghanistan, in a way going arm in arm with the beginning of skiing in Afghanistan as a nation.
Are there any facilities at all? How do you get up the mountain?
There are no lifts in Afghanistan. So all of the skiing is ski touring. I'm not entirely sure how familiar your listeners are, but ski touring involves you have the bindings have two settings. One is a loose heel, which allows you to sort of cross-country ski, and one is a fixed heel, which allows you to ski down. Additionally, you put something called skins on the bottom of the skis. They used to be seal skins, but now they're synthetic, which allows you to slide. As you go forward, it slides, and it doesn't allow you to go back because it grips on the snow. So essentially, you walk up the mountains and you ski down. And if you're comparing it to going up on a lift and skiing down, it's terrible because you have to walk up for every run. But if you considering it hiking in the mountains in winter, but instead of having to hike down, you get to ski down, it's a lot of fun. So all of the skiing in Bamiyan is ski touring, except for a couple of years, there was a sort of jerry-rigged tow rope, which had a sort of wheelbarrow at the top, which had the sort of, the rope went through the loop there. And at the bottom was a motorbike with the tire taken off for a loop at the bottom. So that was a sort of couple of hundred meters long tow rope, which was installed. But apart from that, it's all ski touring.
How many people have you taken there over the last few years?
Since that first trip in 2011, we must have taken about, I'd say maybe 100 skiers over those years. Some years we took more. Some years, especially during COVID and when the Taliban first took over, we didn't take any. But we probably take between 10 and 20 skiers a year on average.
Presumably they have to bring their own equipment with them.
Yeah, we advise people bring everything that they need. Over the years, through various donations, there is a small ski shop in Bamiyan. Between 2015 and 2018, the program was sponsored by Volkl, who are a German ski manufacturer. They helped support the two Afghan guys who tried to compete for the Winter Olympics. So some of their equipment came out. There was a Slovenian, when the Slovenian troops pulled out, they had a lot of empty containers go to Afghanistan because they were going to be full of military equipment going back. And there was a lot of old equipment was put in a container and brought over for people to ski with. So there's a fair amount of equipment kicking around. But if you want the equipment that you really want, then yes, you're going to have to bring it with you.
Well, I've been writing about skiing for more years than I care to admit. And I have to say, I had no idea there was any skiing in Afghanistan. I've been to about 550 resorts in the world, but not Bamiyan.
Well, Bamiyan, it would be hard to describe it as a resort. I mean, what is a resort? Because there is a small ski shop, not that you would be able to see it signposted anywhere. It's just in the back of someone's house. And people go skiing. There's no fixed infrastructure. I'm not sure. I mean, you know better than me, Peter. Is that a ski resort or is it just people living in the mountains that go skiing? I'm not entirely sure.
Well, I have a close friend that have friendly competition about the number of resorts we've been to. And we spend an awful lot of time and long lunches and an enormous amount of wine discussing what actually is a ski resort. And we decide a ski resort is something that has a map. I guess it has a map of the area. I call that a ski resort.
Well, in 2010, when this New Zealand-supported tourism development program, there's more than a map. There's a book. Two people went and spent the winter in Bamiyan, created some maps, wrote a book about different routes, about the conditions. And so if it has got maps, and so I guess if it's got maps, it's a ski resort. Bamiyan is a ski resort. That's one for your list. You can make it 551 this winter, maybe.
I think that's absolutely right.
And what about now with the Taliban? How do you manage that?
In 2021, with the Taliban taking over, the main people who were involved in the skiing, so there was a female ski program for women that skied. Well, there were three main guys that ran the ski club. In addition to managing the ski club, which had male and female competitors, they assisted myself and some others with an event called the Marathon of Afghanistan, which was, well, it was the country's only mixed gender sporting event. There were two races, a marathon and a 10K race, and we had about 700 competitors a year, split pretty much 50-50 between men and women, the majority being Afghan men and women. And so they were fairly high profile. So those three and the female skiers, I mean, I'm sure you remember the summer of 2021, the scenes at the airport in Kabul and all of those kind of things. So those people left Afghanistan at that time because they were seen at risk for working on gender equality projects. We went back to Afghanistan for any kind of tourism in September, October of 2022. We did some cultural tourism. And then I went back with our international ski guide, Anna, and met up with some of the local guides, and we brought four tourists over in March 2023. So we've just started going back. Yeah, unfortunately, there's no women involved in certainly Afghan women involved in the ski program, which is obviously a shame. And the way that Afghan women have to live in Afghanistan is especially if they come from urban areas, is pretty awful. But we've started going back in March of 2023.
What's your relationship with the local Taliban? I mean, presumably you have to negotiate with them.
Yeah, I mean, we have to get a visa. We have to, in Kabul, get everyone that visits internationally, you have to get a letter to say which provinces you're going to visit. Beyond that, there's not much relationship with them. I mean, we get the paperwork from them. Obviously, we have to abide by the laws of the country we're in. When people ask me what the Taliban seem to think of international people going there for tourists, they seem fairly ambivalent about it. They're not particularly excited that international people are coming for tourists, but they're not against it. It's like, if you want to come, that's fine. That was the surprising thing, is that just it doesn't seem to be a huge amount of interest. If we're coming, we have to get the documents. But apart from that, they pretty much let us get on with things. In Afghanistan, the central government has never been very strong, whether it was the kings or whether it was when the international community there were there. So it's kind of the same now. Once you get into the countryside, the people who own the land and the people who live there in the farmers, they're the ones that are okay with you skiing in the mountains behind their farms. It's not really the Taliban are the government, so they can do things. But generally speaking, if you've got permission off the people whose land it is, then... And it's the same people we knew for 15 years.
What about accommodation and food?
For those trips, we come into Kabul, and Kabul has reasonable hotels. I mean, it's got a Serena Hotel, which is quite fancy. And once you get to Bamiyan, there's a couple of newish hotels which have attached bathrooms, which have hot water most of the time. And in Afghanistan, if you like sort of meat and bread and rice, then it's a great place for you. For vegetarians, it's not an ideal place. Yeah, it's mainly kebabs, stews, palau rice, these kind of things, and huge sort of naan flatbreads. These are your sort of basic staples.
What about what happens if you injure yourself, which after all is a hazard with skiing that we must all be aware of?
Absolutely, and especially with ski touring. You know, you're going off-piste, so there's an additional, you know, there's the avalanche risk as well. So to begin with, when we go with our tours, we have an international guide with us who has avalanche training, and we don't push it too much with what we do with the skiing, because it's not the Alps. There's no helicopter coming to rescue you until you get to Kabul. Hospital provisions are pretty limited. So we have the local guys and Anna, they have rope and they have a system together in how they would bind ski together. If they need to get someone off the mountain who's broken a leg or something like that, they've got their basic skills to be able to do that. But I mean, there's a basic hospital, but they're not going to be able to perform surgery or something like that. They will be able to stabilize you. And then it's a question of getting people to Kabul. People can get insurance, which will get them repatriated, but that's only really going to be as far as Kabul. So we would probably be responsible for getting people as far as Kabul, where there are hospitals which are okay. But that is a risk. The further you go off the beaten path, the further you go off piste. If something very serious happens to you, it's going to be very difficult for the doctors, however well trained they are in Afghanistan, to have the capacity to do much about it. But broken legs, all those kind of things, they can stop bleeding, they can do things. But if it's a very complicated incident, it's going to be really tough.
And what about doctors and things? Do any of them speak any other languages?
Yes. I mean, the international community was in Afghanistan for 20 years. And despite the fact that a lot of money was wasted and money went for the corruption, some of that money was spent on education. I mean, from when I was in Afghanistan 15 years ago, finding people who could speak English who were capable of those kind of jobs were limited. Now, there was a lot of money spent on education. In the cities, there are doctors, many of them who can speak English, if not, we would be able to have one of our guys translate. And so people are capable. The issue is the resources, the actual equipment. That's the problem in Afghanistan.
What about insurance? I mean, nobody should ever, I'm always preaching, no one should ever ski or think of going skiing without insurance. But it must be pretty hard to get insurance cover for one of your trips.
Of course, not just for the person involved, but it's for their loved ones and their tour operator. You know, if someone gets injured on one of our trips and they don't have insurance, we're left to make very difficult decisions about, do we authorize, you know, medical treatment? Who's going to pay for it? Nobody should be put in that kind of position, whether it's a loved one or whether it's us. When you travel to a country which has state or FCO travel warnings against them, most normal insurance is invalid. But there are insurers who will, as you know, Peter, you worked in conflict regions. I'm sure you had some sort of insurance. There are insurers that will cover you. Have insurers that will cover you to go to areas where the security risk is higher. Plus, having a ski policy is quite tricky. They do exist. We send a document out to all our guests with information about the types of policies they can have, but also we have a list of companies that our guests have used in the past. As I'm not an insurance broker, we're not supposed to recommend any, but we can put a list together of insurance companies that others have used in the past, and then the guests go and have a look at those and make their choice. It's a limited number, but they do exist.
I've always been wary of going to a country that's on the Foreign Office prescribed list, where there's a warning that you shouldn't go to a particular country usually for safety reasons. Not least because if I then write about it and encourage people to go, I'm putting them in a very awkward position. Also, insurance is usually invalid in countries that are on the list. What do you think about that?
Bad things do happen in countries. It's not the whole story of the country. And of course, the FCO advice is a sort of top line these are the risks. We don't think you should travel unless it's urgent, or we don't think you should travel at all. But as we know, because we've visited other countries, what happens in a country is much more nuanced. Whether it's riots in France, which, you know, some parts of France would be no-go areas, whilst others would be functioning perfectly normally. A lot of the times, places that we go are much more nuanced than the FCO top line. So we have a great deal of information about that, a great deal of additional information and a great deal much more nuanced information. So on one hand, I think that, of course we do. We organise tourism in a lot of countries where there's FCO warnings against travel. We feel that it's possible with small groups and done responsibly, it's possible. But I also believe that it shouldn't be sort of encouraged for everyone. It's not like, oh, everything's fine. And therefore having magazines and newspapers, having policies which say we shouldn't promote it, I'm also okay with that. I can hold those two views at the same time.
And what does the US State Department say about their people coming as tourists to Afghanistan?
Normally, the State Department and the FCO pretty much walk in lockstep on warnings to countries. There might be slight differences, but generally speaking, they would have the same. And for Afghanistan, the data will show that there's been a lot less people killed in the last 2 years in Afghanistan due to insurgency than there was in the previous 10 years. However, the FCO and state advice has a greater warning now than it has at times during those previous 10 years. Part of that is for political reasons, and part of that is that there's just a greater unknown because they're not sure what the Taliban's going to do, just because in the last 2 years it's been relatively stable with regards to insurgency doesn't mean it's going to continue that. So some of the FCO warnings are political as much as to do with security risks.
Well, let's take a look now at other countries that you go to. I didn't know you could ski in Afghanistan.
Before I delve into that, I mean, one of the things we like at Untamed Borders, a lot of countries we work in, there's quite a single sort of narrative internationally about them. So when people in the UK who don't have a huge interest in sort of foreign politics think of Afghanistan or Iraq, they just think of sort of violence and desert, or huge amounts of sort of problems in these countries. All of that is true, but of course, other things happen in these countries as well. People go to work every day and fall in love and have weddings and good things happen and they win sporting contests and they do all the other sort of things that happen in the UK as well happen in these countries. It's not all doom and gloom. And I quite like the skiing because as soon as you say, oh, skiing in Iraq, people are like, well, how's that possible? It's just a big desert. And you've already opened people's minds to the fact that it might not be quite as they had imagined in the country. And so they might be open to the fact that other things can happen in these countries that isn't all just doom and gloom. Huh. So in Iraq, as you said, most of it is the flat plains that run through the vast majority of the country. But in the far north, in the Kurdish region, there are mountains and they rise as high as 3,000 meters, quite close to the Iranian border. And so after a couple of years of doing ski guiding in Afghanistan, and we organized cultural trips in Iraq, we thought perhaps we should try and also organize some ski trips in Iraq. We know there's mountains. We know there's snow. This could be something sort of fun for our guests as well. And so in 2016, I went to do a recce trip. And to be honest, at that time, Iraq was very unstable. I mean, ISIS, Daesh had control of Mosul, one of the largest cities. And so the city we would fly into in Erbil is only sort of 100 kilometers from Mosul. And the front line was maybe 60 kilometers outside of the city. I went to one area which I'd read about. There'd been an article about cross-country skiing in a place called Penjwen. And I went there and I found that there is a Basque Kurdish cultural society which runs quite strong. And it seemed very strange, but the Basques are a nationality split over two countries of Spain and France, and Kurds are a nationality split over four countries of Syria, Turkey, Iran, and Iraq. And so they have this kind of cultural exchange, and these Basque guys had gone over and taught people how to do this very simple cross-country skiing techniques. But the place where the best skiing is a place called Choman, which is further north and next to the Big High Mountain. So yeah, so in 2017, we bought a bunch of skiers who had skied in Afghanistan and thought, oh, this would be fun to go skiing somewhere else. And then in 2018, a few people skied in the area. We did another ski touring race. And there was a winter festival that had existed in the 50s and then Saddam Hussein had stopped it. So they decided, the local community of Choman, to revive that winter festival around the ski race. That's happened, apart from a short break during COVID, that's happened every winter since. And so it's a slightly different experience. Rather than staying in hotels, we stay in sort of homestays in the town of Choman. And as part of that program, there's an organization that organizes sports and outdoor activities activity for women in Iraq, specifically for people from the refugee camps from the conflict with ISIS. And some of those girls get to go up and have the ski lessons, just gives them a day away from the camps. And so that is the kind of overview of the Iraq skiing and the sort of and the program there.
So when is the ski season? I guess it's the same in Afghanistan. When does it start and when does it end?
Well, they're both Northern Hemisphere, so essentially it's the same as in Europe. As you know, with climate change, it's all moving around a little bit. But generally speaking, we would say from sort of mid-January to towards the end of March is probably the best time to go, because it needs a bit of time for the snowpack to really get there. Afghanistan, it can go a bit longer. The mountains are higher. In the Kohi Baba Mountains near Bamiyan, they top at 5,000 meters. So there's always a possibility to do sort of spring skiing later in the year. But I would say mid-Jan to towards the end of March.
And then, of course, neighbouring Iran has really quite sophisticated skiing by comparison, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, they, in a number of areas, I mean, the big area is just north of Tehran. And yeah, they have ski lifts. It probably doesn't compare to the big resorts of Europe. But yeah, there are lifts. There's a real ski community there. And in fact, a lot of the skiers in Iraq, since we've started doing it, have bought secondhand Iranian skis because there's a lot of trade along that border to practice on.
Yes, certainly. I was in Tehran when the revolution happened. It happened, I think, on a Saturday morning. And I was planning to go skiing that weekend, which is a little way from Tehran and quite remote. And I was planning to leave at 5 a.m. I'd borrowed all the gear and everything else to go and spend the weekend skiing. And then the revolution broke out mercifully at 4 a.m., not 5 a.m. Otherwise, I think I'd have lost my job.
You missed quite a big scoop there, wouldn't you, Peter?
You also offer skiing in Pakistan as well.
Yeah, we sometimes organise stuff in Pakistan. There is in Swat Valley, there's a resort there called Mulum Jabba, which has some lifts and some nice runs. And there is another valley further north called Naltar, which is managed by the Pakistani Air Force. And so sometimes they let you ski there and sometimes they won't. But Mulum Jabba is the main resort. But of course, you get people doing ski descents of some of the 8,000 metre peaks in Pakistan. It's got some of the world's highest mountains. You know, K2 is there, the world's second highest mountain. And so you get some of these really adventurous types go up and do ski descents of incredibly steep and high peaks as well.
What are your clients like, the people booking with you? Are they mainly men, I assume? They've got to be for going to Afghanistan.
For Afghanistan, I'd say probably a third of the people that we guide generally are women. I'd say with the skiing, that's probably similar. Maybe the slightly more men skiing. There isn't anything to stop a woman going to Afghanistan to ski or to go as a tourist. The majority of the restrictions are placed on Afghan women, not on international women. But they're from all sorts of backgrounds. Generally, it's because they like to travel. That's the main draw. So it's people who like to travel to interesting places. And then if you have something else that you like to do, so if you like to run marathons or if you like to go hiking, or if you like to go skiing, then it's just an extra way of combining two of your sort of passions. But I would say people go skiing in Afghanistan or Iraq because they want to go to Afghanistan or Iraq. And then the skiing is kind of like it's another way of accessing the country, rather than people who are big on skiing and they're like, oh, where's the next best skiing destination?
They've got to be a pretty high level of skier to be able to manage the ski touring.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, you've got to be able to make your turns in off-piste conditions. I mean, that's the basics. In Afghanistan in the past, before the Taliban took over, because there was a bigger ski program, there was the women's ski group, there was this tow rope. We did take people who really couldn't ski much. They just saw it and just for whatever reason, they just said, I want to see this. And people who really couldn't ski, but because there was that tow rope for the beginners, they could go on the beginner's slope and learn how to, I mean, why you'd go to Afghanistan to learn how to ski? But it's more for the experience of it all. Yeah. But certainly in Iraq, yes, you need to be able to ski off-piste. The actual touring, the walking up, it's not particularly technical. I mean, there's things, you know, you keep your toes on the ground and as you slide up, and there's some things that you do to make sure if it's a bit steeper, you grip better and you're more efficient, so you don't get as tired. But generally, the touring bit's quite easy. But yeah, as you said, you need to be able to ski in all conditions.
Yeah, our son on his gap year went to India and he skied in Manali. I think they took him up by Land Rover and
Donkey.
So is anything like that? Is there anywhere people can get to without ski touring, without skins, to ski down?
I mean, yes, when we skied the very first year in the Salang Pass, got a 2 kilometer long tunnel built by the Russians, and it goes between Kabul and Mazar-i-Sharif. Mazar-i-Sharif's in the north of Afghanistan, and Kabul's further to the south. So this is the road through the Hindu Kush. And so you could drive up to the mouth of the tunnel, which is about over 3,000 meters. You could start skiing down from there. In addition, as you might imagine, the sun can be quite strong. And so you'll often have south-facing slopes. The snow melts or it's very thin, which means you can walk up very easily. And the north-facing slopes still have lots and lots of snow on them. And so there are other areas where if you didn't want to skin up, you can walk up and we could hire a donkey and you could donkey up. But generally speaking, when we have the groups, we ski tour. There are opportunities to do that kind of thing. But Anna, who's from Slovenia, she is our international ski guide that goes on the trips. She's a huge donkey lover. She lives in Slovenia on a farm and she has, I think, half a dozen donkeys and she loves donkeys. So yes, there is a certain donkey love with Untamed Borders.
I know it's very difficult, James, but can you give us some sort of indication, a ballpark indication of price for any of these trips?
On the website, we price in US dollars. The ski Iraq trip is $2,500 and the ski Afghanistan is $2,850. I think they're 8 days and 10 days respectively. That includes all the sort of on the ground expenses, but it doesn't include flights or visas. So you've got to add those on as well. But they're on the website. You can always drop us an email as well and we can send them further information. A lot of people have questions before they book trips with us, which is understandable.
If you want to know more, where can people look?
They can go to the website, www.untamedborders.com, and they can also see images on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. All of them are at Untamed Borders. You can also drop us an email at info@untamedborders.com.
Thank you very much. And we'll be doing another episode with you, won't we, about other travels, not skiing, but all the other different experiences you can have in unusual places.
Just give us a taster of that. What are the other things you do away from skiing?
Away from skiing, we offer cultural trips. So you're doing the cultural, historical, the monuments, the geography in a lot of countries in Central Asia, in the Middle East and North Africa. But that includes Afghanistan. It includes Iraq, Syria, Yemen, Somalia, Algeria, Libya, South Sudan. And we also organize sort of trekking routes there. We helped organize, to this date, the only mixed gender sporting events in Afghanistan and Somalia's history. So yeah, anywhere that you might find difficult to go yourself, but still has a lot of history and interest, that's where we go.
Well, I hope you'll come back soon and tell us all about it.
I'd love to. Thank you.
And thank you very much for coming on our show. It's been fascinating. That's all for now. If you've enjoyed the show, please visit our website, actionpacktravel.com, or you can subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or any of the many podcast platforms. You can also find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We'd love you to sign up for our regular emails too at peter@actionpacktravel.com. Until next week, stay safe.
I am you.
And you are me.
It's just a crazy storm.